ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So, reading from Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 5. Today we're reading text 13. Wait, right? Or 12. Chapter 15, text 12. Oh, yeah. Sorry about that. Okay. Yate jasata bhagavan yudhishula panir Bhisma pita sagivrijo sramadani jamme Anye pichaham amunaiva kalevarena Prapto Mahendra Bhavane Mahat Asanardam Yat Tejasata Bhagavan Yudhishula Panir Vyasma Pita Sakirijo Sramadani Jamme Anye pichaham amunaiva kalevarena Prapto Mahendra Bhavane Mahat Asanardam Yate dasata bhagavan yudhishula panir Bhisma pita sagirijo stramadani jame Anye pichaham amunaiva kalevarena Prapto Mahendra Bhavane Mahat Asanardam Please chant. messages, please. By whose? Tejasa. By influence. Atta. At one time. Bhagavan. The personality of God, Lord Shiva. Yudhi. In the battle. Shulapani. One who has a trident in his hand. It's Ma Pitaha. Astonish. Sagirija. Along with the daughter of the Himalayan mountains. Astram. Weapon. Adat. Awarded. Nijam. Of his own. Me. Unto me. Anya api. So also others. Cha. And aham, myself, amuna, by this, eva, definitely, kalevarena, by the body, praptaha, obtained, maha indra bhavane, in the house of Indradev, mahat, great, Asana Ardham, half elevated seat. Okay. Okay. Translation in Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki. It was by his influence only that in a fight I was able to astonish the personality of God, Lord Shiva, and his wife, the daughter of Mount Himalaya. Thus he, Lord Shiva, became pleased with me and awarded me his own weapon. Other demigods also delivered their respective weapons to me, and in addition I was able to reach the heavenly planets in this present body and was allowed a half-elevated seat. Purport. By the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, all the demigods, including Lord Shiva, were pleased with Arjuna. The idea is that one who is favored by Lord Shiva or any other demigod may not necessarily be favored by the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. Ravana was certainly a great devotee of Lord Shiva, but he could not be saved from the wrath of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Ramachandra. And there are many instances like that in the histories of the Puranas. But here is an instance where we can see that Lord Shiva became pleased even in the fight with Arjuna. The devotees of the Supreme Lord know how to respect the demigods, but the devotees of the demigods sometimes foolishly think that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is no greater than the demigods. By such a conception, one becomes an offender and ultimately meets with the same end as Ravana and others. The instances described by Arjuna during his friendly dealings with Lord Sri Krishna are instructive for all who may be convinced by the lessons that one can achieve all favors simply by pleasing the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna, whereas the devotees or worshippers of the demigods may achieve only partial benefits, which are also perishable, just as the demigods themselves are. Another significance of the present verse is that Arjuna, by the grace of Lord Sri Krishna, was able to reach the heavenly planet, even with the self-same body, and was honored by the heavenly planet Indradev, being seated with him half elevated. One can reach the heavenly planets by the pious acts recommended in the Shastras in the category of fruitive activities. And as stated in the Bhagavad Gita 9.21, when the reactions of such pious acts are spent, the enjoyer is again degraded to this earthly planet. The moon is also on the level with the heavenly planets, and only persons who have performed the virtues only, performing sacrifices, giving charity, and undergoing severe austerities, can be allowed to enter into the heavenly planets after the duration of life of the body. Arjuna was allowed to enter into the heavenly planets in the self-same body simply by the grace of the Lord. Otherwise, it is not possible to do so. The present attempts to enter into the heavenly planets by the modern scientists will certainly prove futile, because such scientists are not on the level of Arjuna. They are ordinary human beings without any assets of sacrifice, charity, or austerities. The material body is influenced by the three modes of material nature, namely goodness, passion, and ignorance. The present population is more or less influenced by the modes of passion and ignorance, and the symptoms for such influence are exhibited in their becoming very lusty and greedy. Such degraded fellows can hardly approach the higher planetary systems. Above the heavenly planets, there are many other planets also, which only those who are influenced by goodness can reach. And heavenly or other planets within the universe, the inhabitants are highly intelligent, many more times than the human beings, and they are all pious in the higher and highest mode of goodness. They are all devotees of the Lord, and although their goodness is not unadulterated, still they are known as demigods, possessing the maximum amount of good qualities possible within the material world. One second. Om Gyan Tamindasya Gananjana Shalakoya Chaksho Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Nama Om Vishnu Braya Krishna Bristaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamini Tanamane Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nevasesha Shunyavari Pashtatri Shatarine Avanchakalpa Tru Bhishta Kripa Sindhu Vyayavacha Patitanam Bhavanembyo Vaishnavimbyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadhara Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Okay, I'll read the verse one more time. Yat te jasata bhagavan yurishula panir vishma pitasa girijo stramadani jame anye pichaham amunaiva kalevarena prapto mahindra bhavane mahad asanardam. It was by his influence only that in a fight I was able to astonish the personality of God, Lord Shiva, and his wife, the daughter of Mount Himalaya. As he, Lord Shiva, became pleased with me and awarded me his own weapon. Other demigods also delivered their respective weapons to me, and in addition, I was able to reach the heavenly planets in this present body and was allowed a half-elevated seat. In one song, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was singing, saying that he offers his respectful obeisances and he considers his worshipful deities, all the Vaishnavas, all the Vaishnavas of the past, all the Vaishnavas in the present, and all the Vaishnavas that are to come in the future. So basically, he's offering his obeisances to all living entities and seeking their blessings. So I seek the blessings of all the Vaishnavas here, that I could speak something for the pleasure of Srila Prabhupada and Krishna, Lord Gauranga Mahaprabhu. So, in the translation, Arjuna is speaking, and he is saying that it's by Krishna's supreme mercy that he was given an elevated seat. So, in the same way, although I have no good qualities and I come from a very low background, somehow by Srila Prabhupada's mercy, I am sitting on the Vyasasana today trying to speak something. And we see in one of the first books that I read from Srila Prabhupada was Easy Journey to Other Planets, where he's giving the method of how to reach higher planets and ultimately to transcend this material universe and go to the Vaikuntha realm. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada is explaining the difference between demigod worship and worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And there's an analogy that he gives somewhere else that there's a misconception among some people that no matter who you worship, what type of worship you do, it all goes to the same destination. And Prabhupada gave a very simple analogy. He said if you bought a plane ticket to Hawaii, you're not going to end up in India. So wherever you direct your energy, that's where your consciousness will go. And he's explaining that when people reach the heavenly planets due to piety, when the piety is exhausted due to enjoyment in the heavenly planets, they also have to come back down to this earthly realm and gain karma again. Because in the heavenly planets and the hellish planets, one does not gain karma, actually. He is merely just burning off either his good or bad karma. And the earth is like a central pivot. As compared to in LA, we have the Union Station where all the buses leave at the beginning of the day, and at the end of the day, they all meet up Union Station and they park there. So that's the earth. So whatever activities you do, you will go to one destination, but ultimately you'll have to come back if you don't transcend this material realm and go to Vaikuntha. The Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is saying that the wise know the difference between vikarma, karma, and akarma. So vikarma is just activities that are not according to Vedic injunctions. Mostly activities in Kali Yuga. It's just vikarma, ugra karma. And karma is performing activities according to the Vedic instructions to get pious results. But the devotee is striving for akarma, or activities that don't produce either piety or impiety, but rather to simply please Krishna, as compared to if you throw a boomerang, the boomerang comes back to you. But when you throw the boomerang to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he catches it. So we're throwing our heart to Lord Krishna. And the purport, Prabhupada's also explaining how Arjuna was able to enter into the heavenly planets in his self-same body, actually. So, but we understand that if we want to reach the spiritual realm, we have to go beyond this physical, temporary body and reestablish ourselves in our original spiritual sarup. And Prabhupada is so revolutionary at a time where in the 60s and 70s when this scam of going to the moon was so famous and it was all over television, that it was one step for mankind to achieve something higher. Prabhupada was actually the first one to say that it was false. And now that we understand that there's so many videos and documentaries of how it was a hoax, and half the people you talk to will believe that it's a that it's a hoax. But Prabhupada was the first one to say it. He actually started this idea. And when I was in Vrindavan, Kadamba Kanana Swami was giving a class, and he was, I forgot exactly what verse it was being spoken on, but it was talking about the creation of the material universe coming from Karna, Dakshai, Vishnu, and Lord Brahman, all these far out things. And I was, I asked him the question, how, if somebody asked a devotee, a non-devotee asked inquisitively, okay, you say that the process works and that you can experience it yourself by chanting and by reading, by following the four regs, that you will yourself experience a higher state of consciousness. So if I'm performing these simple activities and it is working, still I haven't experienced Lord Brahma or Karna, Dakshai, Vishnu. Why, if a few things work, like chanting, why am I expected to believe everything in the Bhagavatam? And that's what I asked Maharaj. And he said that oftentimes we have this conception that we have to package Krishna consciousness in a nice and attractive way, and even maybe sometimes water things down for the public to accept us favorably. But he said that actually this was not Prabhupada's mood. Prabhupada never spoke like that. He spoke straight Bhagavatam, even to new people that have never heard of Krishna consciousness. He was speaking about Lord Brahma and Karna, Dakshai, Vishnu, and all these things. And I remember hearing a class, Prabhupada, I think he was speaking, it seemed like in a university classroom setting or something like that, because he was speaking to all these new people, and he was speaking about the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam. And he was explaining so many topics, and at the end he was saying, so that is the Vedic conclusion. You can accept or you cannot accept. That is up to you. But we are speaking the truth and we will not deviate from this. So those are a couple of things I got out of the purport when I was reading this. Another thing was towards the end, the last few sentences, it says, such degraded fellows can hardly approach the higher planetary systems. So we have to investigate our consciousness and see whether we're ready to go back to the spiritual realm. You know, if we go there now in our present state of consciousness, will we just cause a disturbance? That's why we're still here in the material world. Just like in the temple room, sometimes, you know, the devotees were chanting together and we have loving relationships. But sometimes a stranger comes in and starts acting a little strange. This has happened a few times. And it kind of distracts people. And it changes the mood in the temple room. So in the same way, you know, we want everyone to become devotees. Everybody's welcome. But if they're acting crazy, then maybe they're not ready yet to come into the temple room. So in the same way, you know, if we go back to the spiritual world and we cause disharmony in Krishna's pastimes, then it's not good for anybody. So this chapter is entitled "The Pandavas Retire Timely," meaning this means that, like towards the end of the chapter, we'll hear about how the Pandavas actually choose a lifestyle similar to Vanapras. You know, they leave all their material obligations and prepare themselves for going back to Godhead. And it's very interesting. In one letter to a disciple, Srila Prabhupada writes that Arjuna and Kunti actually don't live in the Vaikuntha planets. They are eternally living in the material world wherever Krishna is having his pastimes. So Arjuna is always on Krishna's roadshow, going wherever Krishna is. And in the beginning of the chapter, we are reading how in the pain of separation, you know, Vipralamba Bhava, Arjuna is experiencing ecstatic symptoms that we hear in the Shishtashtakam. Nayanam galara shudaya varanam garagaru vidayakala palakir nichitam vibhu tava tava nama gunahena bhavishyati, that he was actually crying in lamentation of separation from Krishna, and his voice was choking up. He couldn't speak, and his hairs were standing on end. He was trembling. So Mahaprabhu is actually giving us this mood of devotion. It's considered the highest mood. And he's praying in this Shishasana verse that, you know, when will these symptoms actually manifest within my body when I try to chant the holy names? And there's a verse, there's part in Chaitanya Charitamrita that Mahaprabhu was feeling so much ecstasy by seeing Lord Jagannath. He was seeing his Lord, Shyamasundar. He was trying to chant Jagannath, but the words weren't coming out because his voice choked up. And he was just saying, Jagagaka. Jagagagaga, and he couldn't pronounce the words nicely. So in this way, Arjuna is lamenting the loss to the world now that Krishna has left, and he's lamenting the devastating loss to his own life. You know, his best friend, his life and soul, Krishna, has left his association for some time. And in this connection, we can understand that the pure Vaishnavas and the spiritual master are actually giving us life. You know, without Krishna, what's the point of living? It's just, this world is like a void. Without devotional service, there's no substance. There's no meaning to our existence. And Narottam Das Thakur, he sings that beautiful song in separation from all the pure Vaishnavas. You know, he's in lamentation. You know, where is Sarup Damodar? You know, just imagine, you know, Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami were there. And Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, they're all there in Vrindavan. And Narottam Das Thakur just missed them by a few years. He came right after. So he's lamenting that they all left before me to go join Lord Chaitanya, who he calls the great dancer. And he says, in anguish and separation, all I can do is break my head against the stone. So this is actually the perfection, this deep feeling of love and separation from the Vaishnavas and Lord Krishna. Like personally, most of us here, we've never met Prabhupada physically. And a very dear disciple of Srila Prabhupada, who I take as one of my main Shiksha gurus, I've also never met him. So there's this feeling of separation there, that I never got their personal association. But honestly, I still feel they're here. You know, when I hear the classes from them, and I'm dedicating my life to serve their instructions. And so I still feel like Prabhupada's still here, and my Shiksha Guru is still here, present on this world, speaking through sound. And actually, when I was in Vrindavan, when Prabhupada was staying in the Radha Damodar temple, if you go there now, his room is still there, and there's a murti of him, and his bed is still there, and he's sitting behind a desk, similar to upstairs. He's sitting behind a desk with a dictaphone, I think he has a pen. In Radha Damodar, he has a pen, he's like writing. But on his desk, actually, there's a note that he wrote. And this is what he wrote. He said, those who stay there at the Radha Damodar temple will realize that those acharyas, Srila Rupa, Sri Jiva, Sri Kaviraj Goswami, and Sri Bhu Garba Goswami are still living there. And if one is actually advancing in the spiritual field, they can still take instruction from the acharyas living there. It is up to the individual how he realizes this by his devotional service. By staying there, you must realize how pure the environment is. The environment itself gives a higher taste of consciousness. Radha Damodar themselves are there, and the great acharya samadhis are there. There cannot be any other better place to live than Radha Damodar. This corner at the Radha Damodar temple, which I think he's referring to his room, because it's in the corner of the temple, he says, it's just like the hub of the will of the spiritual world. It is the center. And then Prabhupada says, I eternally reside in my rooms at the Radha Damodar Temple. Signed, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. So, if remembering this point, I want to give an example how we can all experience this personally in our lives. In the Mandya Lila Chaitanya Charitamrita, during the Rath Yatra pastimes, there were different Sankirtan groups. The devotees split up in different groups performing Sankirtan. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself was simultaneously in each group. He expanded himself. And it was explaining that most people couldn't see this. They just saw him in this one form with their personal group. But the internal devotees knew what was actually going on. And in a similar way, when we go out and we preach, you know, this ISKCON is a preaching movement, so whatever we're doing is connected to the Sankirtan mission. So in any of our services, we can meditate how Lord Chaitanya is simultaneously with each and every one of us while we're performing our service. And when I read this pastime of the Rath Yatra, I remembered something in the 10th canto, the Ras Lila, the dance, where Krishna expanded himself to dance with the different gopis. And there's a direct correlation between Vraj Lila and Sankirtan, the Sankirtan mission. And we can understand that nothing that we do here should be mechanical. Everything has so much depth and so much layers of realization behind it. When I was on Navadvipa Parikrama, there's a sannyasi who was born and raised in Vrindavan. His name is Prabodhananda Sarasvati Maharaj. Really amazing devotee. He's super learned. He was giving this... He was talking and he was saying how Bhaktivinoda Thakur one time was explaining that he was watching the devotees circumambulate Tulsi Devi, and that everything turned into Vrindavan. Actually, the devotees turned in. He was seeing the gopas and gopis circumambulating Vrinda Devi and serving Radha and Krishna. And so in this pure state, this Premanjana Charita Bhakti Valochanena, we have this salve of love, that the pure devotees are seeing Krishna with a heart full of love everywhere. And it describes in Chaitanya Charitamrita that everywhere that Mahaprabhu looked only enhanced his love of God, because all he saw was his worshipful Radha Shama Sundar. So, but in the neophyte stages, we are actually purifying ourselves and qualifying ourselves, training our intelligence and our minds to have this vision through, it's called Jnana Chakshush, Shastra Chakshush. Seeing the world, seeing reality through the eyes of the Shastra, through the eyes of the Guru, and through the eyes of the pure sadhus. And then we can understand that Krishna is always with us, along with all his associates. And we begin to understand that Vrindavan is not just a physical place that one goes to, but it's a state of mind. That anywhere, in any situation, we can always be absorbed in Vrindavan. And of course, Srila Prabhupada says that he's always there in Radha Damodar, he also in the temple. He also said that he's always there in his instructions, that he lives forever in his books. And in 2014, I actually stayed at the Denver temple for a couple months, and I was distributing books there with the devotees. And Mother Nidra, who's a great saint in our movement, she's been distributing books for over 40 years, and she's constantly doing devotional service at every moment. Whenever I'm there, she's always engaged, and she's very pure. And I asked her one time, I was distributing books at the outdoor mall, and I forgot exactly what I asked her. There was some advice for distribution. But she was explaining the mentality we should have, that when we're out there, the whole Guru Parampara is with us. Prabhupada, Bhakti Siddhanta, all the way back to Krishna. The six Goswamis are there with us while we're distributing books. And she says that that's her meditation when she's out there. That she's backed up by the whole parampara. And as we move on in this chapter, we can see how Arjuna begins to have this very same experience that we're talking about, feeling the Lord's presence. Although superficially, Krishna physically left the world. So we've been hearing in the couple previous days, and we'll be hearing for a few more days, Arjuna's actually describing his intimate association that he had with Krishna, and the adventures they went on, and how Krishna empowered him to do so many wonderful things, and explaining how oftentimes their relationship was informal. You know, they would just hang out together and sit together and sleep together in the Sankirtan van, and I'm just kidding. They would lay down together sometimes and just eat together, this is a few verses coming up, but it reminds me of that one verse also in the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, when Arjuna sees the universal form, and then he starts kind of, he has a little bit of fear. He's like, oh my God, I didn't realize you were so great. And he was asking for apologies. Oh, please forgive me that, you know, I just treated you like another friend. But actually, Krishna likes this friendship between him and Krishna. He prefers that over this awe and reverence and veneration. So while remembering these leelas and pastimes and instructions that he got from Krishna, Arjuna, we'll read later, begins to feel pacified, and he feels union with Krishna just by remembering him, just by speaking about him. It's also a nice meditation for each of us to remember, you know, the times where Krishna manifested in our lives in a significant way, and you know, many times how he's empowered us to do some service or how to help other people come closer to him. And I just want to read one quick thing. It's in a purport that I recently read in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Prabhupada saying that according to the living entity's desires, he's wandering from one body to another and from one planet to another under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Paramatma. We understand Paramatma is guiding all living entities and ultimately trying to bring every living entity back to Krishna. So it says, however, when the living entity comes to his senses by the mercy of the Lord, that means Paramatma is constantly at every moment trying to help us come to our senses, but we are constantly ignoring that. But once the living entity accepts or reciprocates with the Paramatma and comes to his senses by the mercy of the Lord, he is awarded devotional service. Thus he is saved from the clutches of Maya. At such a time, he can see his eternal friend, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and become free from all lamentation and hankering. So I'm sure everybody here can remember a time when that happened to them. They were absorbed in material consciousness, and maybe it was a sequence of events that happened that brought them to devotional service. Maybe they were born in the movement. Maybe they were also born in the movement for some time, didn't take it serious, and something happened where they started taking devotional serious. Everybody's got a different story. But I remember what happened to me. I think I was around 16. This is when I first started trying to understand more about life. Was somehow Krishna gave me an epiphany, and because, you know, I was born and raised eating meat and with my parents and my family, but somehow one time I was doing that activity and I had this really deep epiphany about the horrible thing that I was doing, and I was looking at my plate in disgust, realizing that I was eating a dead corpse and that it was actually a living entity that was killed just for my satisfaction. And from that day forward, actually, I made not a vow, but I guess you can say kind of a vow. I was convinced that I didn't want to do that anymore for the rest of my life. So that's when I started realizing that if this was a lie, And then I started researching and finding out about the meat industry. And then I was thinking, if this was a lie and I was fooled my whole life and brainwashed to believe that this was okay, what else is a lie? You know, what else am I being fooled about? And then I started seeing everybody around me almost living in this virtual reality, just covered by some illusion and being lied to and just accepting the lies. And as time went on, when I was about 18 years old, I started looking more into different philosophies, reading religious texts, listening to music that had a philosophical meaning to it, trying to find why I'm here and why existence even exists in the first place. Why is this world here? And I remember understanding that this world is almost like a dream. And for some time, I got in this weird state where I couldn't make the distinction between waking life and dreaming life. It was like this weird period I was going through. And somehow I had this, through meditation and reading different books, I had this idea that I wasn't the physical body. It wasn't a deep realization, but I understood that I was somehow the conscious observer, just observing the reality before me. And of course, it was filled with a lot of speculation also. But when I was 19, this was actually a turning point in my life. I left home. I left my parents' house, and I decided just to live outside so I didn't have to have a job, and I didn't have to make money or go to school. I wanted to be free so that I can try to figure out what life is all about in the first place. And I felt like if I had material obligations, they would just get in the way. So I just gave that up, my job and going to college. And then I started traveling, and I ended up in Chicago. And somehow, when I was living at my parents' house, I don't know how it got there, but there was a perfection of yoga in my room. I have no idea how it actually even got there. And I was somehow, because I was in the mode of ignorance, I always procrastinated. And for some reason, I was reading all these other books, but I never read The Perfection of Yoga, which is really small. And you could get through in a day if you want. But I remember just looking at the cover and thinking it was cool. And then looking in the back at the picture of Prabhupada and just thinking that he was cool too. And just like, he looks like some sort of mystic yogi or something. But when I ended up in Chicago, I actually found another perfection of yoga right outside of a church that was letting me stash my backpack and sleep there sometimes. And I remember picking it up and I had some so-called friends that I was hanging out with. I was asking if it belonged to any of them, and they're like, "No, man, it's all you." And so I kept it. And I remember looking like at a distance away, and a few blocks away, I saw I think it was two brahmacharis in saffron, and they just walked across the street and then kept walking, and they went behind a building. I didn't see them again, but I remember they had a big bright smile on their face, and I didn't put the two and two together that maybe it was they gave a book to someone and put it. But anyways, okay, so I read the book. I came back to California, and I decided to sleep in San Francisco at Golden Gate Park. And I had this voidous conception. I actually didn't read the whole POI, I just read parts of it. So I still had this void conception that when we die, we just enter into a void, and that this world is just an illusion. It doesn't exist in the first place. And so one night, I was with friends all day long, and we had a really far out day. And towards the end of the day, everybody left. They all left. They all went their separate ways. And I was walking in Golden Gate Park, and it was like pitch dark. And then I started to realize that I have no one to depend on in this world, that I don't have a shelter, actually, that I'm all alone in this dark universe. I don't know who I am, and I don't know what this world is. I don't know what happens when I die. I don't know where I came from, and nobody else seems to know the answers either. And I was just laying in the tent thinking, There's no point to going back to my parents because they don't know anything either. They're going to have to die. They're fallible soldiers. And I just felt like I needed something, but I didn't know what it was. So I actually stayed up all night in the tent, shaking and crying because I didn't know what to do with my life. And after that day, I became a little bit more serious. And then I read The Perfection of Yoga. I ended up hitchhiking down to Venice Beach, and I was sleeping on the beach for a while with all the... If you go there, you'll see like a bunch of traveling street kids. I was one of those guys hanging out. And I would leave them for a few hours, like a couple hours a day, and read The Perfection of Yoga. And it said, chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. I didn't really know what that meant, to chant. I didn't know that it was supposed to be verbal. So in my mind, I was repeating Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna. I was already a vegetarian, and the other ones I was having trouble with. But I remember, so I didn't know to chant, so I would just, it told me that we should always think of Krishna. So I would look at a picture of Krishna just for a really long period of time and just try to meditate on Krishna's form. And somehow I became convinced that this is what I wanted to do, was to follow whatever this book is telling me. It was very convincing. And one thing happened after another. I met a devotee, Mataji. She like preached to me, and I told her I already had the Bhagavad Gita because some guy I was traveling with also gave me a Bhagavad Gita as it is. I met another devotee on the bus who gave me an SSR. And then I saw the Harinam party at Venice Beach, but I was in a car. And then somehow it just kind of clicked. I was like, those guys are the people that are practicing what's in these books. I got to meet them and talk to them. But yeah, long story short, I met Banabhata Prabhu, who was doing Food for Life, and I told him that I read the book and that I'm very interested. So he invited me to the Sunday feast. So I don't want to keep talking about myself. But anyways, I came to the Sunday feast, and ever since then, I never left. But the Radhanath Swami also wrote a whole book about his adventures. It's called The Journey Home. And he actually didn't want to write the book because he felt like he didn't want to talk about himself. You know? But one of his best friends, Bhakti Tirtha Swami, basically begged him to write the book. And he said, Maharaj, you have to understand that this is not your story. It's actually Krishna's story, how Krishna brought a young boy to his lotus feet. And so as Bhakti Tirtha Swami was leaving his body, he made Radhanath Maharaj promise that he would write this book. And so Maharaj fulfilled that promise. And I'm sure everybody here also has an amazing story. And sometimes it's nice to meditate how Srila Prabhupada has brought us to Krishna's lotus feet. And there's only a few minutes left, but I just want to read one more thing. Actually, two more things, but they're really short. This is about a story about how a very fortunate person came to Krishna, a very fortunate grandmother. And it was on dandavats.com. It's called Blessed Granny. That's what the title is. So it's a letter to Shivaram Swami. So I will read this for you. Please pay attention. It's very inspiring and heart-touching. It says, Dear Shivaram Swami, Hare Krishna, please accept my humble obeisances, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. I hope you do not mind my writing to you. I have never written to a spiritual master before. You do not know me. My name is Bhaktin Dora, and I live in Pécs, Hungary. I am 14 years old, and I live at home with my mother and older sister. Some years ago, I went to the Hare Krishna festival with a friend. I was not very interested, but I enjoyed the chanting and dancing at the end. After it was over, I bought a book, The Science of Self-Realization. I do not know why I bought it. Generally, I never read, but I think it was because of the chanting. I took the book home and cannot remember what happened to it. One day, my mother found it and was very angry with me. She thought I was reading this kind of thing. You see, our family members are very strict Catholics. They thought Krishna consciousness was some kind of brainwashing. Actually, I wasn't reading the book. I had forgotten all about it. somehow it just appeared. Anyway, my mother was going to throw it away. My grandmother, who was 68, was in the kitchen at the time. She lives in the apartment upstairs. She came in and took the book. She looked at it and scolded me in a very heavy way. I thought that would be the end of it. I did not mind so much as I was in a lot of Maya at the time. About a week later, I overheard a conversation between my mother and grandmother. Granny was saying that this was not just an ordinary book. She said that what Prabhupada was saying is what Jesus Christ said, and that Krishna is God. I was very surprised. She said we should listen to what Prabhupada said and chant Hare Krishna because that was the religion for the age. There was a lot of talk about how Christianity was no more and no one was following the Bible, but what Prabhupada said was pure and perfect. Things really took a turn from there. One day my grandmother visited the Nam Hat, the local Krishna center, and began to chant on beads. She also began to buy Prabhupada's books one by one. She was spending all her pension buying what she called the beautiful holy Bhagavatam. Sometimes she could only afford to eat potatoes, but she kept buying the books. The devotees even went up to her flat and helped her set up an altar. When I went upstairs, there were Krishna pictures everywhere. That was really the beginning. One night, Granny had a dream about Prabhupada. Something really happened to her then. I don't know what it was, but she began to get very enthusiastic. Next, she began to get the whole family involved. I mean, not just me and my mother and sister, but her two sons, their wives, and six children, as well as her brothers, sisters, and relatives. Before, she used to carry a Bible and quote Jesus Christ. Now she has a Bhagavad Gita and quotes the good Lord Prabhupada. She became a veritable transcendental terror. Everyone in the family has to chant at least one round a day. In addition, Granny made everyone become a vegetarian, including my dog, Sikra. And we offer our food to a picture of Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya. Now I am also getting out of Maya and chanting and reading a little also. Where I go to school, my friends inquire about Krishna, since they know I am a devotee. The whole family goes to the Nam Hat, all 16 of us. During the Christmas marathon for book distribution, we all tried to distribute Prabhupada's books. Even Granny would take books with her to the market and sell them to the vendors. Everyone is afraid of her because she is fearless. They all think she has gone crazy, but she doesn't care. Now she is saving to go to Budapest to see the newly endowed deities. She has heard that Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda came to Hungary and are being worshipped there by the devotees. She says she wants to see God at least once in her life. At this year's Hare Krishna festival, you were speaking to the guest after the kirtan. You must remember my grandmother because she came and sat right next to you, asked you so many questions. And at the end, when you stood to leave, she even kissed your hand. Do you remember her? I also wanted to ask a question, but I was shy. Could I please ask you now? I hope you do not mind, Maharaj. So this is the last paragraph. I want to know what kind of man Srila Prabhupada was. He must be so dear to Krishna to have spread this message all over the world. What are these books that changed my family so much? How is it possible that he can speak so powerfully through them? Hare Krishna. Okay. How is it possible that he can speak so powerfully through them? You must feel very fortunate to be his disciple. How great a man he is. Sometimes when my granny chants in front of a picture of Krishna, she cries also. How does Prabhupada do that? I want to cry like that too. Granny dreams of Prabhupada and sometimes she talks to his picture. Although it says on the cover of the book that he passed away, is Prabhupada really dead or is he still alive? Do you think I can meet him someday? I am sorry that I have gone on so. I would like to be a good devotee one day and help you and Prabhupada spread Krishna consciousness. Please, could you answer my questions? Your servant, Bhakti Indora. And if you guys look up on Dandavats, there's also, it's late, and you guys need to honor Prasadam. But Shiva Ram Swami gives a reply, and it's also very amazing. But that's going to take another few minutes. So I'm sorry I didn't leave any time for questions. Please accept my humble obeisances, and please forgive me for my offenses. Vancha kapa taribhyascha kripasindabhi evacha patitanam pavanibhyo vaishnavimbhyo namo namaha. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Ki jai. Thank you.